From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Kassel, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, and filling in for Peter Sagal, Peter Gross.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Carl Kassel. Thank you, audience. Thanks, everybody. Well, as Carl said, my name is Peter Gross. I am filling in this week because Peter Sagal is off on his annual bird hunting trip in Arkansas. He was just so excited to go down there and test his new sonic boom weapon. But we're going to do our best to have fun without Peter. Call us up, and we will ask you some questions about this week's news. We hope you answer them. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. And now it's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi there, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, it's Joan Friedman in Urbana, Illinois.
Hi, Joan in Urbana. You're slightly downstate from us here in Chicago.
Yeah, I guess.
You're south of us. You guess? Let me just tell you, you are.
Okay.
Okay. No problem. Joan, let me introduce you to today's panel. First up, it's the author, humorist, and hockey dad, Tom Baudet.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Joan.
Next up, a comedian performing January 22nd and 23rd at the Orleans Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Paula Poundstone.
Hi, Paula.
Hi, Joan.
And finally, he's a writer for the Boston Globe magazine and an author of the book Idiot America, Charlie Pierce.
Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Joan.
Hi.
Welcome to the show, Joan. You're going to play Who's Carl This Time. Carl Kassel is going to read you three quotes from this week's news, and if you correctly identify or explain two of those quotes, you will win our prize, which, of course, is Carl's sonorous voice on your home answering machine.
All right.
All right. Are you ready, Joan?
I think so.
Fantastic. Here is your first quote.
The waterworks have begun.
That was Politico's summary of the peaceful, if slightly weepy, transfer of power in the House of Representatives on Wednesday. So who took charge there?
Boehner did.
That's
and he
right.
He did cry.
He did cry. John Boehner. Very good, Joan. It was a big week in Washington. The air was thick with that new Congress smell. The House Republicans.
That's what that was.
That's what that was, yeah. The House Republicans are in charge now, and they are just chomping at the bit to do everything. Or really more to, like, undo everything. First on their agenda, of course, is repealing the health care reform. And they've also threatened that they might undo financial reform, too. But, you know, we think, you know, why would you stop there? They could make Obama take up smoking again. You know, fatten up all the kids in America. Reunite Brad Pitt with Jennifer Aniston. Force George Lucas to unmake the Star Wars prequel. You know, move the Capitol back to Philadelphia and finally just get in the Mayflower and throw it in reverse. They also read the Constitution out loud on Thursday on the floor, and it was kind of nice. You know, it was like a nice symbolic gesture, and of course they had to make some pretty big changes. They didn't really get around to reading the part about slavery and the Three-Fifths Compromise, and they took out the part about prohibition. And
did they read all the amendments they want to change?
Yeah, well, that's what they did. They sort of got going. And
the new
versions? They took the Second Amendment and made it the First Amendment. And also the Fourth Amendment and the Ninth Amendment and the 15th Amendment.
I would have volunteered to read the Third Amendment, the single most overlooked amendment in the Constitution. No quartering soldiers in my house.
That should be the First Amendment.
I mean, that one's really working.
Exactly. Yeah. Everyone fights for the other ones, but this one's really working.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Oh, working in my house anyway, Paul.
I was going to say, you mean those guys aren't supposed to be in my house right now? I feel like an idiot.
You didn't read the thing?
See what happens? You weren't paying attention when they were reading the Constitution. You didn't know that, see?
The reason they didn't read the whole Constitution is there's parts of it that John Boehner just can't here without boo-hooing.
Yeah. All right, Carl. Let's read our next quote.
Is it a sign of the aflocalypse?
That was a Washington Post writer talking about a mysterious event in Arkansas this week. What exactly was the aflocalypse?
Oh, that was all of the birds falling from the sky.
It's right. That is very good. Well, the one good piece of news in this whole story is that someone has finally stopped tweeting. Too soon? They're birds, people. They're birds. No one is really sure, you know, what happened to these thousands of birds that suddenly fell out of the sky in Arkansas this week. It was bizarre. There are all sorts of theories floating around. They thought maybe it was lightning or fireworks or a secret weapons test of some kind. And the most recent theory, actually, is that it's just a viral marketing campaign for the sequel to the popular iPhone game Angry Birds, which is called Angry Dead Birds. Right.
Yeah, but what was really strange is somewhere in a small retirement cottage in California, Tippi Hedren went, ah!
I've seen this before.
The other thing is people think it's the end of days. You know, they just jump to this conclusion that all these animals are dying. And, of course, the 24-hour news networks, they just, you know, pump all this up and everybody gets swept up in this, you know, hysteria.
Well, I was telling my wife as we were walking down by the River of Blood the other day, there's no reason at all to be worried about
it. That's what I said to the locusts that were in my house.
Right, I know. And this end of days, that's wishful thinking. We're only day three of the new Congress. Please.
We'll get there. That was the thing, too. Anderson Cooper was like, I want to clear the air. Let's keep a clear head. So he brought, of course, former teen idol Kirk Cameron on to answer the question, are these dead birds a sign of the apocalypse? And of course they're not, you know.
Why would he?
Because Kirk Cameron starred in the Left Behind movies.
Exactly.
He's an apocalypse.
So he would know.
Yeah, once you're in a movie about something, you become an expert on the topic.
Exactly right.
Which is why, you know, if we're ever invaded by, like, giant Transformers, everyone will be like, Shia LaBeouf, what do we do?
Yeah. You know?
I talked to Julie Andrews when I want to escape the Nazis.
She did it in style.
With panache, she escaped the Nazis. Carl, let's hear our last quote.
I love food. I love drinking, boys, dancing until my feet swell. And I love my body, especially the badonk.
That was a quote from a new book released this week by what pint-sized star of the show Jersey Shore?
I have no idea.
Oh.
Oh, man.
No. You know what, Joan?
Joan?
You're good to go.
Your stock just rose in mine.
Yeah, exactly. Joan, be blissful in your lack of the knowledge. The correct answer is Snooki, of course.
I still have no idea.
Yes. Well,
Joan is a class act. Yeah.
The big story here, of course, is not that Nicole Snooki Polizzi wrote a book, which, by the way, is called A Shore Thing, for those of you updating your Amazon wish lists. No, the shocking thing here is that apparently fans of the TV show Jersey Shore have actually been clamoring for more reading material. We're guessing that, you know, they just need something to supplement the Valtrex pamphlet at the free clinic.
Ooh. Ooh.
Well, as far as we know, I mean, they've yet to record the audiobook for A Shore Thing. We have right here with us a man who would be, in our opinion, very, very good at reading the audiobook of A Jersey Shore. So we would like to give the publishers a sense of what that would sound like.
During the summer, the girls enjoy all the Jersey Shore has to offer. Hot Guidos, fried Oreos, and lots of tequila. She wriggled on him like a professional lap dancer. She knew this for a fact. She'd taken a stripper dance class and got her certificate at the end. Sorting through jerks to find a decent man takes time, but you have to do it or else become a lesbian.
Paul Castle, everyone.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Joan do today?
Well enough. She had two correct answers, Peter, so she wins our prize. Congratulations, Joan.
Way to go, yeah. Joan. Thank you so much for playing, Joan.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Charlie, the Republican National Committee is looking for a new leader, and they recently held a debate. Candidates were asked, what's your favorite book? Most of the answers were very predictable, but one candidate confused everybody with her answer, my kitchen table. Why did she say that?
Oh, this is the lady who thought they asked her, what's your favorite bar?
That's right. Now,
and by the way, my kitchen table is a weird answer even to that question.
Yeah. even after somebody else before her had answered the Reagan diaries, Anne Wagner thought that it was a good idea to say, probably my kitchen table. Yeah. Which, for the record, the New York Times has called a page-turner and a heartbreaking, fully realized tale of a woman who will never be elected RNC chair. It was worse, too, when they said, who's a Republican that you really admire? And she said, Captain Morgan. Possibly, though, the best part of this entire thing was they asked the same question of Michael Steele, of course, the current chair who's running for re-election, and he answered the book part of the question, the real question, with War and Peace. And then right after he said War and Peace, he followed up by saying, and this is not a joke, he said, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Oh, yeah.
Which is not from War and Peace, it's from Tale of Two Cities.
Well, obviously he'd had breakfast with that woman.
Thanks, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah, Robert DeChico in Dallas, Texas.
Robert from Dallas, Texas. How are things down in Dallas?
They're about three times warmer than Chicago.
That is probably and almost always correct. Well, it's nice to have you with us, Robert. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is the topic today?
Sorry, Peter. NPR has cut our bluff topic budget for 2011.
Robert, one of the keys to running a successful business, of course, is reducing expenses. Why spend thousands on health care for employees when you can just hand out vitamins and shake weights for less than $30? Well, this week, we read about an employer who perfected this concept. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about managers cutting costs. You choose a true story, and you will win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready?
I'm ready.
All right, good. First up, Tom Baudet.
If you're British cobbler Martin Connellan and the temperatures in your workshop fall to 10 degrees Fahrenheit because the doors are left open to vent toxic fumes, you do the right thing. You buy your workers coats. If they're still cold and complaining, you do the other thing. You hire a hypnotist to make them think they're warm. After a 5-minute session with hypnotist James Kerwin, they've been stripping down to their shorts and T-shirts. Worker Adam Hood said, I definitely feel better. All my life I've had cold hands, and that's even gone. I bought them all jackets, but they were still moaning, said a delighted Mr. Connellan. I didn't think it would work, but soon they were complaining about how hot they were. Hypnotist Kerwin explained, it's all about mind over matter, programming people like you would a computer. Perhaps next on the employee reboot, that's not frostbite, it's a heat rash. Go back to work.
From Tom Baudet, a story about a boss hypnotizing his employees. Your next story of pennies saved and pennies earned comes from Charlie Pierce.
The law firm of Ward, Oxendale, Fowler, and Wilkinson in Atlanta has perfected a system by which it has been able to lay off 50% of its junior associates, the drive-through affidavit. Clients drive up to the firm's offices, which are located in an abandoned Jack-in-the-Box franchise. Using the old drive-through system and speaking into the clown's mouth, clients are sworn in on a virtual Bible. They give testimony into a video camera and a microphone, and then having it run through voice recognition software and notarize the client having long since driven away. It's quick, it's clean, and as far as we can tell, it's even constitutional, said Lynn Oxendale. We're hoping to save enough money here to improve the physical plant and perhaps get rid of the clown.
From Charlie Pierce, a new definition of the phrase legal zoom. Your last story of creative cost-cutting comes from Paul Poundstone.
Staying alive during these difficult economic times has required some companies to cut employee comforts. T&J Auto Parts Supply Company owner Stan Tychinski in Somerville, Mass., found $50,000 a year savings cutting employee coffee. But to assuage rankled worker attitudes, he installed coffee bean plants. We were quite happy, said employee Michael Bonner, until we realized it takes 4 to 6 years to grow any beans. My break is only 15 minutes. We were up there with cups the first day. I stole a bunch of sugars from the IHOP. The employees have largely detoxed from caffeine as a result. That wasn't really my plan, says Tychinski, but they say they feel better. I'll take credit for that. We take turns taking care of the plants, and in a couple of years, we'll have the T&J Auto Parts Supply House Blend. I can't wait to see what unexpected perks come from using our parking lot snow for drinking water.
All right, Robert, you have got a story from Paula Poundstone about making do without coffee, and from Charlie, fast food style law, and then finally from Tom Baudet, a story about a boss brainwashing his employees. Which one of these is the real story?
I am going to say the hypnotized employees.
The hypnotized employee story from Tom Baudet. Okay. Well, to find out the correct answer, we spoke to a person who's responsible for this cost-cutting measure who advises that you try the same thing.
Turn off your heaters and go and see your hypnotist. You don't need to spend money on heating bills.
That was Martin Connellan, the Baumgrove cobbler, who had his employees hypnotized. Robert, you are right. Congratulations. You earned a point for Tom Baudet, and you won our prize. Carl Kassel will record the greeting on your answering machine. Robert, congratulations. Good job. Thanks for playing with us today.
Thank you all.
All right, goodbye.
Mr. Boss, it's that boss music. You gotta live like a boss. Be like a sleep, like a breathe, like a boss. I'm a boss. You don't want to interrupt the plan. That'll make me force my hand. Trying to make you understand I'm the boss. You don't.
And now the game where we invite on big people and ask them little questions. It's not my job. Tony the Goose Siragusa spent 12 seasons in the NFL as a defensive tackle, winning a Super Bowl with the Baltimore Ravens in 2001. He's now an on-field analyst for Fox Sports and the host of the show Man Caves on the DI...
Why? There's three tough letters, D, I, and Y. I deserve it. Just mumble the last one.
All right.
Okay.
He is, according to our records, the largest man ever to play Not My Job. Please welcome Tony Siragusa to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Very good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, you are an on-field analyst, which is, as far as I know, is it a new position in the broadcast world that you created, or are you just the best one?
Yeah, you know, most teams have on-field reporters. You know, they go and, like, when all of a sudden you'll see a person with their foot facing the wrong direction, and they come on and they say, well, this guy broke his ankle, he probably won't return.
Right.
I'm really not the guy who does that. I really analyze what's going on the field, sort of like in the booth, but I'm down in the end zone with the people, smelling them, letting them know what smells, what doesn't smell,
exactly,
what looks good, all that kind of stuff.
It's great. I mean, you know, you're down there with the fans and on the booth, and the fans, like, do the fans ever heckle you? Or are they like, giving you a hard time?
Yeah, I had a guy in Philadelphia throw a snowball. He was a little shocked when I climbed into the gave a little Jersey justice. And
that's you feel like you get a really great vantage point down there in the end zone that the guys up in the booth can't see?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, players, you know, when you're a player and you're watching film to watch what the other team does, everybody watches it from the end zone. So that's where I like analyzing from. I can see a lot more, you know?
Does it, like, ever make you feel like, oh, I want to get back out there again? Because you didn't really retire that long ago, you know?
Oh, I'd love to hit somebody.
Yeah. Now, do you keep up with these players? I mean, you see these guys. There's guys that probably played when you played, you know. Do you still have relationships with these guys?
There's a couple. There's like three or four that played when I played. Yeah. You know, I still consider myself more of a player than a reporter or than a, you know, like a person in the media field.
Right.
You know?
Do you ever get text messages from Brett Favre?
Yeah.
Hopefully more tame. Hopefully more tame than the...
No, they're worse.
Yeah.
They're worse.
Oh, good. And do you have allegiances? Like, you know, when you watch the Ravens play, are you just sort of like baldly rooting for the Ravens?
No. You know, it's little kids ask me all the time, what's your favorite team? I mean, you know, the Ravens paid me the best, but they're not paying me anymore, so I have no allegiance, you know?
All right.
But, you know.
That's the way of the world, though. Now,
if they
want
to pay me, I will definitely go and lean their way.
This apropos of nothing... what city are the Ravens from?
Okay. Nice talking to you, people.
Baltimore.
Baltimore.
Is that you, Paula?
Yes.
That's Paula Poundstone.
Yes.
She
Paula,
knew.
What's your number? I'm going to text you the city so you really don't ask those questions anymore.
Baltimore. They're my favorite.
Now, you spent so much time in the NFL, you know, hitting people. You had a way where you could get all your aggression out. What do you do now to relieve stress? Like, if I cut you off in traffic, am I in trouble?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Well, I won't cut you off in this interview either. So you just talk and talk. Do your
It's time. Not called road rage. It's called just rage. Total rage.
Total rage.
Yeah.
Now, you have some other pursuits that you're involved in that are not football-based at all. You host this show on, I think it's called the DIY Network?
Yes, you got it. DIY, we do a man cave show. What we do is we go in the guys' houses that sort of their wives have taken over. You know, yeah. Are you married, by the way, Peter?
I am married, and okay. We just bought a house, and I am completely ceding it to my wife.
Well, you know how it was before. Did you have a house before you got married?
No, we lived in an apartment. We lived in an apartment.
You lived with your mom, you said? What'd you say?
I mean, well before that, okay. I lived with my mom. We lived in an apartment, but we lived together.
Oh, you lived in an apartment. Yeah. So, you know, like, but when you were by yourself, were you ever a bachelor? Did you ever live on your own while you were a bachelor?
Yeah, I did.
You know, if, don't lie. If you were a bachelor, I mean
by definition, at some point, I didn't, like, move out of my parents' house and in with my wife.
When you're a bachelor, you go and you go get the cool DVD surround sound. You know, you get some chips and stuff that are in your cabinets, maybe ketchup. There's not much going on. And then the woman comes in, and you got this cool bachelor pad, and all of a sudden you blink your eyes, and you've got scented candles and flowers, and you know, everything in your house has flowers on it, and you got 45 pillows on your bed you can't even lay down.
It's a good decorating show for guys. I mean, there's so many shows for women that are about, you know, like decorating your home.
Every show but mine is for women. Don't kid yourself.
And you're also an actor. If people saw the film 25th Hour, you're an actor now, you were in The Sopranos. How did you get into acting?
Well, it's a pretty funny story. After the Super Bowl, I was going through Home Depot because my leader drain was broke, so I was fixing that. So I got a little call, and he goes, and I said, hello, and he goes, Goose, what's going on? It's Spike Lee. And I thought it was one of my buddies. I go, yeah, okay, buddy, later. And I hung up. I thought it was one of my friends playing a joke on me. So all of a sudden, the phone rang again, and... He goes, no, it's really me. Don't hang up. He goes, I'm doing a movie, and I want you to act in it. And I'm like, all right. He goes, you're going to be an Italian mobster. I'm like, great. Easy. That's what I've been doing my whole life, you know? Real hard. I guess I'm playing myself, Spike. Way to be creative. But then the whole role turned to a Russian mobster, and you know, it was with some pretty talented people. I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah,
Edward Norton. I mean... You want to hear a great story? We're all doing the reading, and we're all sitting around. I've never done this stuff, right? So they're like, oh, your call time. I'm like, what the hell is a call time? You know, and they're saying all these terminologies that I don't really understand.
It's the time that you're supposed to show up in the acting world.
Yeah, exactly. So this girl sitting next to me, she's dressed like in that, what is that when they wear all black, Paula? You know that. Gothic stuff.
Goth. Emo goth girls, yeah.
Yeah, so the gothic look, and she had her pantyhose were ripped. It looked like she was, like she dragged herself over here. Mm. And, you know, so I look over and I said, hey, hon, I said, what is all this call? What is this on this paper? And she goes, I don't know the time you got to show up and everything. She goes, this is your first time doing this. I go, yeah, why is it showing? She goes, no, you'll be okay. So we sat there a little while. I says, is this, your first time? She goes, no, I've done a couple things. And then all of a sudden, Spike Lee goes, I'd like to introduce our cast. And Anna Paquin, please stand up. And the girl next to me stands up, and I felt like a real idiot. You know, like this girl's got an Oscar at 3 years old, and here I am. Exactly. You know?
Tony, we're delighted to have you with us. And now it's time to play a game that we are calling.
Mary had a 340-pound defensive tackle. His fleece was white as snow.
They call you the Goose, which Wikipedia feels the need to point out comes from the pronunciation of your last name, in case anyone thought it was about your elegant beak and long, articulated neck. But how much...
It is.
It is. Okay, well, then Wikipedia once again has got it wrong.
Yeah, they're wrong. Wrong again.
But how much do you, the Goose, know about Mother Goose? That's the question. We're going to ask you three questions about Mother Goose. If you get two of them right, you will win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on the home answering machine of one of our listeners. Carl, who is the Goose playing for today?
The Goose is playing for Ethan Murphy of Acton, Massachusetts.
All right. Tony, are you ready?
Okay.
Let's do it.
I'm ready.
First question. There's a little bit of debate about whether Mother Goose was an actual person. Some people believe she was a 19th century Boston mother of 16 whose name was Elizabeth Goose, and others believe that she was one of these people. Was it A French aristocrat known as Goosefoot Bertha, B, your great-great-great-great-great-grandmother Siragusa, C, a famous cabaret dancer at the Moulin Rouge in Paris known for her bawdy rhymes?
Wow.
A, B, or C.
I think I'm leaning towards my great-great-great-great-grandmother for that.
Or it could be one of the other ones.
Moulin Rouge, huh?
Yeah, either a dancer at the Moulin Rouge or a French aristocrat known as Goosefoot Bertha.
Oh, that sounds pretty boring, aristocrat. I'm going to go with C.
C, you're going to go with C, the cabaret dancer?
Well, wait, hold on. You didn't sound too impressed.
Well, listen, I'm not going to tell you what to say, but your instincts are pretty good.
I'm going to go with A for Mr. Guy on the telephone who I'm representing. There.
That's right. A is correct.
Whoa.
Yeah. A.
You didn't say final answer, so I got to change it.
Yeah, exactly. I gave you some leeway. It's a French aristocrat known as Goosefoot Bertha. She was actually the mother of Charlemagne and was also known as Bertha Greatfoot and Queen Goosefoot. And
nice.
Was one of the least popular women in France.
Whoa. Time out.
All right, that looks
Charlemagne's mother was named Goosefoot Bertha?
She was known as Goosefoot Bertha.
No wonder he overachieved. That's embarrassing.
She had what did she have, webbed feet?
That's what we think. We think she had webbed feet and deserved the nickname for some reason. All right, anyway, our next question, Tony, for you. Some nursery rhymes have been updated in our more politically correct times. For example, in 2006, British nurseries made what change to a Mother Goose classic? Was it A, Baba Black Sheep, which some people thought was racially insensitive, became Baba Rainbow Sheep? B, Three Blind Mice became Three Visually Impaired Mice? Or C, teachers permitted students to sing Jack and Jack Went Up the Hill if they came from a same-sex household?
I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A. That is absolutely correct.
Wow.
Baba Rainbow Sheep.
Baba Rainbow
That's
Sheep.
That's right, and somebody's got to be the rainbow sheep of the family.
Absolutely.
All right, Tony, you're doing pretty good. Here's your last question. Many people have attempted to update Mother Goose into modern versions. Which of these adaptations is real? Was it A, Cinemax's late night 1992 film, Mother Loose? B, 1967's The Wacky World of Mother Goose, in which all the lovable nursery rhyme characters nearly got put to work in a diamond mine. Or C, the unsuccessful Mother Goose-themed workout video, Jack and Jill LaLanne.
I mean, I'm leaning towards Jack and Jill LaLanne, but I don't know. I never met a woman who didn't like diamonds, so I'm going to go with B.
All right, the B, the diamond mine, that is absolutely correct.
Whoa!
Three in a row.
Unbelievable.
Very good.
Just common sense, man. Common sense. Anything that sparkles.
That's right. This is why you're called the Goose, because not just of your name, but your extensive knowledge of all things geese, I suppose.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Tony do?
Tony aced it. He had three correct answers, a perfect score, so he wins for Ethan Murphy. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Tony. Well done.
Nice.
Tony Siragusa is an on-field analyst for Fox Sports. Tony Siragusa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Mother Goose, I've seen her signing a cut loose. Go and find a sound of gander. She said my real name's a lame, but if it's all the same, let's go have some fun on the veranda.
Thanks, everybody. In just 1 minute, Carl, we'll back a truck full of rhyme up to your ear in our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, it's time for more questions for you from this week's news. Paula, after years and years of isolation and evasion, Iran is now opening up and has invited international inspectors to take a look at their nuclear facilities. But if you look at the invite list, there is one conspicuous omission. What country was not invited?
The U.S.?
That's absolutely right. The United States.
Oh, we are hurt. Oh.
I know. I mean, come on. It's not a party if the great Satan doesn't show up.
I'm unfriending them, I'll tell you that.
Oh, absolutely. They extended the invitation to their Arab friends and a few European countries in Russia and China. Mm-hmm. And the most embarrassing thing was how we found out that we weren't invited, because President Hu Jintao of China accidentally boarded the Evite, President Obama.
They're going to send all sorts of photos of them having a good time with everyone else.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to post them on Facebook.
Look at us doing trust falls with the Israelis. Where were you?
Gosh, if the Israelis were invited and America wasn't invited, yeah. I think we'd be like, okay, we know that you don't like us, but the Israelis, come on. You know, and this isn't even just some like boring old inspection that we're missing out on. This is the quote from the invitation. It is an all expenses paid visit to Iran's nuclear sites, which sounds kind of swanky, but it also sounds like the worst Price is Right showcase showdown ever. You know, the guy next to you won the new car and the dinette set, and you get whisked off to Isfahan to inspect some centrifuges. What a bummer. Paula, there's a big copyright fight that's brewing in the music world. You may have heard about this. Grammy-winning R&B singer Usher has been accused of stealing someone else's material. It's very scandalous. His new song, OMG, they say, is actually a ripoff of whom?
Vicky Carr.
No, it's not Vicky Carr.
Do you know this? It's close to Vicky Carr.
Oh, no,
that's
I
not
do
true
know it. It's Tammy Wynette.
It's actually neither of them. Do you want me to give you a hint? The song OMG may have originally been called Do-MG.
Oh, he stole from Homer Simpson?
Homer Simpson, that is correct.
Oh, my heavens.
Listen up. This is the true scandal of the week. In what may have been hip-hop's most egregious exploitation of cartoon talent since MC Scat Cat, Usher's track OMG sounds suspiciously like a song sung by Homer Simpson in a 2003 episode of The Simpsons. But listen, don't take my word for it. This is the audio track from a YouTube video that was made comparing the two. First, this is Usher. Honey got a booty like pow, pow, pow.
Honey got some boobies like wow, oh, wow. Christmas in December, wow, wow, wow. Give me some depression. No, no, no.
Guilty.
That is it. That is basically it. Usher needs to answer for this cartoon crime. Yeah, as soon as Usher starts like working in a nuclear power plant and names his kids Bart and Lisa, you're gonna be like, all right, pal, I've seen this somewhere before. And it's not the first time that R&B artists have ripped off cartoons. We all remember R. Kelly's sultry jams, Yabba Dabba Do It Till Dawn. Remember that song? And then his huge hit, I Want to Put It in Your Picnic Basket. This is why the recording industry is dying, because there's no more original artists.
Well, you know, I've written, you know, I write things and say them. And
well, very well, by the way.
Thank you. And it's, you know, it's a struggle sometimes to come up with content.
Mm-hmm. A lot easier to steal it, I agree.
And you know, you look for inspiration anywhere you can kind of thing. And you know, sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll, you know, write something down, a piece of paper or whatever. But when you write down, honey got a booty like pow, 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 and you read it the next morning. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't you say to yourself, what the hell's the matter with me?
Tom, 30 armed officers and a SWAT team were sent to rescue a man in Chicago this week after his wife received a phone call from him and thought he was being taken hostage. It turns out he did not mean to call her. What actually happened?
I think he butt dialed her.
He did.
Yeah.
That is right.
Honey had a booty like ring, ring, ring.
Now, while most people have learned to distinguish the sound of a phone being crushed in someone's back pocket from the sound of a hostage taking, sometimes mix-up happen. In this case, the woman answered a call from her husband and heard garbled noises and music that, according to the local police chief, quote, led her to believe there was someone holding him hostage. Mm-hmm. You know, that must be nice to know that you're married to somebody who, whenever something happens, they just jump to the absolute worst possible scenario. It's one time, like, her husband blew his nose and she grabbed a shovel and a coffin and buried him.
I've got a friend who I'll call him Chad because that's his name, who about once a week he butt dials me and he drives around in this truck and we can't figure out why, because like I'm not the first on his list. He doesn't even really like me that much, and it's funny, it does sound like he's being taken hostage. I'm to think of it, and I know how to stop this now. I'll call the SWAT team.
Call the SWAT team.
Well, we actually do have the song that the woman heard in the background, and it's pretty chilling stuff. Can we play that?
Christmas in December, wow, 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 give me tons of presents, no, no, no.
Oh my God, you're being kidnapped. Coming Coming up, it's the Lightning Fill in the Blank game, but first it is our game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play in the air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here in the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming shows in Miami, February 3rd and February 4th. Hi there, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, I'm Michelle from Memphis, Tennessee.
Hi, Michelle from Memphis. How are things going there?
Pretty good so far.
What do you do there in Memphis?
I'm a graduate student in sculpture at the University of Memphis.
Oh, okay. So are you going to get a degree in sculpture, or is it kind of like an art history type thing?
Actually, I'm doing both.
Oh, okay, great. So you're either going to do it if it works out, and you're going to teach it if it doesn't work out? Or
exactly.
Well, I hope you're doing it.
Thanks. I hope so, too.
If I had money, I'd buy a sculpture from you.
Excellent. Let me know when you do.
All right, great. Wow, okay. Let me get your phone number and stuff here. We'll just... Michelle, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each one. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of those limericks, you're going to be a winner. Are you ready?
Ready.
All right, here is your first limerick.
We're free in what concepts we're linking, but we're trapped as to where we are thinking. Our heads are less full than Neanderthal skulls. Through time, human brains have been...
shrinking.
Shrinking, that's right. Very good. Bad news, everybody. If people today were in a brain-off with Cro-Magnon Man, we would lose big time. Cro-Magnon Man had a brain that was 10% bigger than the brains that we have today. That doesn't mean that we're dumb, though. It just means that Cro-Magnon Man may have been really, really smart. They were probably walking around saying, oh, you must see Og's latest wall painting. Simply transcendent. He reminds me of a young Grok.
So our brains are shrinking.
Our brains are shrinking.
In related news, Snooki has written a book.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Michelle, here is your next limerick.
What with laptops and bunches and things, my mattress is losing its spring. In old days, a twin could hold it all in. But now, all the world wants a...
queen?
Oh.
King.
King! That's right!
Of course!
That's right! Michelle, you nailed it. King-size beds are growing in popularity, even among non-kings. People are buying larger beds to use as social spaces in their homes. And with the increasing number of foreclosures out there, it won't be long until you're invited to your first bed-warming party. Welcome. Glad you guys could come. Snacks are in the headboard. Throw your coats, you know, on the bed. Oh, thanks for having us, James. Cool. Really quick, where's your bedpan? Oh, yeah, it's right underneath the bed. You got to go somewhere, guys. If the whole home is the bed, you need a bedpan. All right, Michelle, you're nailing it so far. Here is your last limerick.
By giving fact-bending replies, our sloth we all try to disguise. At work, round the house, with a boss or a spouse, three times a day we tell...
lies.
Lies, that's right. New research out this week claims the average adult tells three lies a day. To some of you, that might seem like a lot. To others, it's probably how many lies you tell yourself before you've even stepped away from the bathroom mirror in the morning. According to this study, though, it's interesting. We lie mostly to our romantic partners, and the subjects usually have to do with house chores and our sexual history. So sometimes the two overlap, where it'll be like, yes, I took out the trash, and no, I never took out that trash. Carl, how did Michelle do?
She had a perfect game, Peter. Three correct answers. Michelle, you win our prize.
Congratulations, Michelle.
Thank you very much.
Very nicely done. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Carl. Let's take a look at the scores.
Well, Tom Beaudet has the lead. He has 4 points. Paula Poundstone and Charlie Pierce are tied for a second. They have 2 points each.
We flipped a coin, and Charlie is elected to go first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. President Obama named former Commerce Secretary Bill Daley to be his new blank.
White House Chief of Staff.
That's right. Critics condemned a publisher's plan to print a censored version of Mark Twain's classic blank.
Huckleberry Finn.
That's right. According to the British medical journal BMJ, a now discredited study linking vaccines to blank was, quote, an elaborate fraud.
Autism.
That's right. A homeless man in Ohio received multiple job offers after a YouTube video featured his amazing blank.
Voice.
That's right. It was revealed this week that while on vacation in Hawaii, President Obama may have become the first president ever to blank.
Wear flip-flops.
That's right. Larry King's successor, Piers Morgan, announced that the first guest on his new show would be the talk show queen blank.
Oprah.
That's right. According to the calculations of one Christian group, May 21st, 2011 is going to be the blank.
End of the world.
That's right. According to the Toronto Sun, the city's hottest new tourist destination is a blank.
Gas station.
No, automated pay toilet. That's right. The new pay toilet on Harbourfront Street is Toronto's new hotspot. It's both the number one and number two destination in Toronto. All right, Carl, how did Charlie do?
Charlie had a great round. 7 correct answers, 14 more points. He now has 16 points and the lead.
Nice work, Charlie. All right, Paul, fill in the blank. Saying he will continue to work for President Obama as a consultant, White House Press Secretary blank announced his departure.
Gibbs.
That's right. The Navy relieved USS Enterprise Captain Owen Honors from command Tuesday after lewd blanks surfaced.
Films, videos.
Videos, that's right. Defense Secretary Robert Gates announced Thursday that he would be cutting $78 billion from the blank budget.
Defense.
Pentagon defense, that's right. After making a deal with Goldman Sachs, blank was valued at $50 billion.
Facebook.
That's right. After years of being called a cracker, blank is now requesting to be called something else.
Ritz crackers.
Close. Wheat Thins.
Oh.
They want to be called a snack.
Oh. I thought it was James Carville.
Yeah, exactly. Just going there.
All right, because of problems in the week after Christmas, on Thursday, New York Mayor Bloomberg announced new techniques that are being put in place to deal with blanks.
Snow.
That's right. According to a new year-end survey, in 2010, Americans spent an average of 34 hours a week blanking.
Texting.
Watching TV.
Oh.
After automated systems alerted authorities to a hijacking, a United flight was diverted to Toronto, where officials discovered blank.
It was just a butt dial.
Close. Very close. The pilots had spilled coffee on the control panel.
Ooh.
Turns out when you're flying on an airplane, maybe you shouldn't fill it to the rim with brim. Because a coffee spill on an airplane's communication equipment just leads to false hijacking codes, SWAT teams, and lots of tears. After 3 hours of interrogation, United ruled out that the coffee was trying to hijack the plane, despite claims of responsibility from the terrorist group Al-Senka.
That's a lot of stuff going on in Toronto this week.
Yeah. Carl, how did Paula do?
Paula had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 12 points, but Charlie still has the lead with 16.
All right. No. So, Carl, how many does Tom Baudet need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
I think you got it in you, Tom.
I picked a bad week to go on a news fast.
All right, Tom, this is for the game. Fill in the blank. To keep the U.S. from going into default, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner urged Congress to raise the blank ceiling.
The debt ceiling.
That's right. Because the holiday Emancipation Day falls on April 15th this year, the IRS has made April 18th the day that blanks are due.
I'm guessing the income tax.
That's
return.
Right. The will signed by Elizabeth Edwards 6 days before her death makes no mention of blank.
John Edwards.
That's right. Apple was flooded with complaints on January 1st when the iPhone's blank feature failed.
The alarm.
That's right. To keep their dogs entertained, border collie owners in Washington State have started blanking.
Letting them balance their checkbooks.
No.
They can do that.
No, renting flocks of sheep for their dogs to herd.
They can do that, too.
Do not let a dog balance your checkbook. People who played the lottery numbers featured in the sci-fi series Blank won $150 in the Mega Millions lottery this week.
Lost.
That's right. A vulture that had been tagged for an Israeli research project flew into Saudi Arabia this week and was promptly blanked.
Shot out of the sky.
Now, arrested as a spy. It's true. Officials immediately became suspicious of the vulture. There was a bracelet on his foot that said Tel Aviv University, so they, you know, immediately recognized him for what he was, a Mossad secret agent. Carl, did Tom Baudet do well enough to win?
He needed 6 to tie, but Tom had just 5 correct answers. So with 16 points, Charlie Pierce is this week's champion.
Well
Charlie.
Done, sir.
Congratulations,
Charlie. Congratulations, sir. in just a minute, now that Snooki has written a book, we will ask our panelists who will be the next unlikely author. First, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR Stations and Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes pre-finished and stained solid hardwoods, bamboo, cork, and laminates. Information at lumberliquidators.com. The Kauffman Foundation, working to advance innovations in education and entrepreneurial success. Learn more at kauffman.org. And the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental, conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godico writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Blythe Haga, who came back this week because we asked her to. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Stolarczyk and Mohammed Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Showbiz Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, who will write the next great book? Charlie Pierce.
Usher's autobiography, Ahab Got a Big Fish, Pow, Pow, Pow.
Paula Poundstone.
Grumpy, it's a tell-all about Snow White and Dopey.
Tom Baudet.
Michelle Bachmann releases her pre-presidential campaign biography, The Audacity of Dopes.
Well, if any of those show up on Amazon panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudet, Paula Poundstone, and Charlie Pearson. Thank you all for listening. Thank you so much. I am Peter Gross, Peter Sagal, and the rest of the crew. We'll see you guys next week. This is NPR.